Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to FFS. I'm David Coulthard, and with me, connected via computer screen, thankfully, a long, long way away, it's Eddie Jordan.
Ah, yes, indeed. DC, I love being part of your madness. I just love that little piece about Manchester Uni. You are such a dick. You have no idea about universities or any type of style. Come on, explain yourself.
Well, look, first of all, you're just rolling in the fact or basking in the fact that I very rarely, you know, because I was taught to speak properly as a children, I very rarely make a mistake with pronunciation. And because you always make mistakes, then the fact that I screwed up. I read the scripts and I didn't separate the fact it was Manchester Uni. And look, I'm never going to hear the end of it. So let's move on. You know,
yes, I agree.
We've got one of our old muckers coming on the show later. So before we bring him on, you do a quick intro, and then I've got a couple of questions from the anchors, and then we'll have our guest on.
Well, yes, my guest this weekend, just like we had a couple of weeks ago, was Ian Banner, following up closely because they all know each other. Charlie Feather. Charlie Feather was married to Ray Feather, who was a great friend of Marie's and a great girl. I grew up with her. She ran the Marlborough World Championship hospitality team. She then moved with Flavio to Benetton. So, you know, the whole of family, including Charlie, kind of steeped in Formula One, but in the background, on the side of it, and mainly on the hospitality side. So Charlie and I, we know each other really a long time. We both quite like Chelsea and football club, that is. And I think what happened was that Charlie saw what we were doing at the Grand Prix. And one of the great photographs of David is you, me and Damon gigging on stage after the Grand Prix, which were sort of iconic. They were mad days. Charlie picked that up and then brought it to a completely different level.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, he is a man that knows how to put on an event. So looking forward to speaking with him. Just before we do, though, a couple of anchor questions here. First one is from David Rogers, and he has a question about wet weather racing. And he asks, how do drivers stay warm dry? They must get soaked through. And with 60 litres of spray per second, how does the car survive and the cockpit not fill up? It must be so challenging. Well, EG, it's a long time since you've driven a single-seater, but you do get wet in the cockpit, but not as wet as you might imagine, David Rogers. Your hands get wet because they're poking out the top of the cockpit, but there's drain holes. I'm not sure if they're actually meant to be drain holes, but there's certainly holes in the bottom of the tub. And I used to sit firmly on the base of the tub because I'm taller than most drivers, which was you know, a compromise whilst I was racing. But the good thing is when you retire, you're a sensible height, where those little drivers who get an advantage.
You're talking about me again.
When they retire, they're still little.
You're either ageist or heightist.
Yes, indeed, indeed. So I didn't have an issue really with getting too wet in the cockpit. It was more about visibility. And I was particularly bad at being able to see in the rain in my mirrors. And it made it very challenging if I was trying to let a Ferrari pass me. Anyone who remembers Spa 98, which was the scene of Jordan's greatest podium results. You're welcome.
And actually, on top of that, it was the scene of the greatest chaos in a race ever, because you wiped out the whole field. And I know that we've told the anchors in the past, but you had the audacity to blame poor Eddie Irvine, who was nowhere near the incident. And you just had to blame anyone but yourself, because that's your style, isn't it? You just walk away from everything, DC. You're on the fence and you're never going to get off it.
Well, look, here's the thing. If Eddie Irvine was in a race and there was an incident, there was a reasonable chance that he was something to do with Catalyst, either because he'd upset a driver before the race or he was in amongst it. So, yeah, he was the easy guy to pin the blame on. But, right, we've got another quick one here from Ashley Nicholson.
Sorry, I need to say something, David, about that, please, if I may.
Please don't.
Because I know you said it's a long time since, but yes, but the reality is, and I think it's better that David really understands this, that the spray that you see, it goes up in a plume and it doesn't really soak you, does it, in terms of the drivers?
Yeah.
And what's interesting is people might ask, why don't they have windscreen wipers on the visor? And the visor is shaped in such a way, and because there's actually a chemical on the visor, that immediately the wet just goes on the visor, it's blown away again because of the wind and the speed of the car. So that's one of the things. But I think that it's not as daunting as you think. And another part that I would just add to that, I always found, and of course I've never got to this anywhere close to the same levels as David or the other drivers, as the track dried out, I don't know why, but I always felt better grip as the track was nearing to dry than it was when it was dry, because you got that little bit of forgiveness in the track and the speed could improve. And that's why it's so important for a driver when they're in a race situation, as the track is drying, it's very important that the relationship between the team and the engineer in charge of calling the shots and the driver. And very often the driver will make that call. He thinks he can go to the medium sets, it's not full wets, or he will very likely call a lap or two before to make sure he puts the slicks on, because the advantage when it does dry is quite huge. David, answer is not the case.
Yeah, okay, EJ, I wasn't expecting such an in-depth. You obviously love the wet. What is it about moist conditions that you get really excited about? Because I've never heard you talk so passionately.
Charlie is nudging me here. He knows what you mean there, DC, but I will try and continue on the vein that I should do. Being from Ireland, we're very used to moist conditions and we excel in them. And that hasn't changed as I've got older, I have to say.
Well, that's good to know. That's reassuring. Right, one quick one here from Ashley Nicholson, and it's a very simple one. What do we both think is the best looking car we've ever seen? He personally likes either the Benetton, which was a sort of multicolored car, wasn't it? Or the black Mercedes of a couple of years ago. I think the 1988 McLaren MP44 and the Jordan 191 is a close run thing. It was a beautiful looking car, but the MP44 won 15 out of 16 races and had two of the all-time great drivers. So, EJ, what about yourself?
Look, I don't want to say, if I say that Jordan was up there, then I'd be perceived to be biased. The only thing I will say to you, in the great wisdom of that wonderful magazine, Motorsport, which is celebrating its 100th, can you imagine, 100 years of production, we've been asked to attend the function. I have no idea for what reason, but I know that the Jordan 191 will be mentioned there, so that's nice. Look, there were some amazing cars, and I have to go back to some of the Ferrari cars. I think there's something iconic about seeing that red, particularly when it's in full flow. We know what it was like with Michael Schumacher, and we know what it was like with Jody Scheckter when they were winning world championships. I actually see the emergence of Leclerc and Sainz at the moment. We're going to see a lot of that red color car. So, you know, I'd have to put them in the mix as well.
Excellent. Good stuff. Right. Well, without any further ado, I think it's important that we bring in our special guest, Charlie Feather. So thank you to our anchors for those questions. Keep them coming in, and you can send them to ffs@whisper.tv. And you can also send them to direct messages to Eddie, who's on social media now. Well done, EJ, for catching up with technology, and at F1 for success. So welcome to the show, Charlie. And EJ is going to do in his, I'm not sure what kind of style EJ has got, but he is going to do the full intro on how you came to be friends, and then we're going to get fired into some questions.
Well, I think at the introduction of your program, of our program, David, right at the beginning, I said that it all happened through his wife, at the time, I should say, Ray Feather, who was in charge of hospitality at Marlborough. That was a huge job that she had because all the big stars were there at the time. And then she introduced me to you. Ray was a great friend of Marie. So it's kind of a family get together. And I think I could be wrong, but I'm a godparent to one of your kids. I'm
you
Billy.
Are.
It's,
you are.
I mean, it goes back an awful long way.
Well, thank you for having me. I mean, how wonderful.
You might
to be
regret
here.
Saying that when we're finished with you. But anyway, go on, Charlie. Let's talk about motor racing and what you've done. And how did this all happen? Because the Grand Prix Ball was something special. And when I think of those crazy days when DC and Damon and Johnny Herbert and everyone else were on the grass at Silverstone long before the new wing and various things, I think that was the catalyst that started people believing that maybe the fans need something more than just the racing. And took it up and you brought it to a new level. Let's hear what
I think obviously you were the instrumental person behind bringing rock and roll to Formula One in those days. I mean, it was those parties you did on the stage after Silverstone were legendary. And I used to watch those, and DC used to see you humming and strumming away up there.
We disconnected his guitar, don't worry. And we also, if he tried to sing, we disconnected that.
You look
as well.
Good, though. You look good.
Yeah, that's my role here.
And it was from there we sort of, my business partner at the time, wonderful man called Paul Marshall, he was at Stowe School. And had been to Stowe, and we went to have a look at Stowe, and we decided to create something a little bit more different from that, something a little bit more upbeat, not upbeat, but upscale. And the Grand Prix Ball was born from there. Most wonderful, beautiful building, not just as a school, but all the grounds. And in 1996, we did the first Grand Prix Ball with Jules Holland. Was performing.
Fantastic.
And that's when EJ first started to, he came to our support. He very much was behind us, and without his help and support, I don't think we could have probably gone on and did what we did.
During that time, I think DC, if I can recall, what the difference with Charlie made it possible, which we used to talk about this. How can we make this into something different? Now, we know how difficult it is to get drivers to do private and public appearances. And you can understand why, because the amount of people that autograph hunters and photograph hunters, particularly now, but this is before the days of social media and people taking photographs with their phones and stuff. Can you imagine me asking somebody in Ferrari, could I use their driver for a Dodgem race? But in those days, it didn't matter. You did the Dodgem race.
Well, we did it. DC, you may remember. I mean, it was,
I do.
We had a Dodgem car set up. I mean, and the idea was to get a few drivers down during the champagne reception on the lawn. And we put you all in Dodgem cars. There was yourself, Damon, Johnny Herbert, I think Jos Verstappen was there, Eddie Irvine, and we sold places to people to sit next to you for the charity, and all the money went to the charity. And the idea was the person in the car in the Dodge next to you had to hold a jug of water, and the person with the most amount of water left in at the end won a free trip to the Australian Grand Prix.
Brilliant idea when there's electricity involved.
Well, imagine trying to do that these days. Wow.
Anyway, so come on, Charlie, you went on from strength to strength. Tell us the kind of people and the musics that you had.
Well,
because
it
grew from Silverstone. You went to other places. But before we talk about other places, who were the kind of people that you had at the Silverstone Ball?
Well, we always went for the big-name artists, because we had the likes of Lionel Richie, James Brown, Sting. We even had Beyonce one year, Kool & the Gang. We had Tony Bennett in Montreal and Tony Hadley, Craig David, all these wonderful big names. And we also had, of course, the wonderful Stereophonics and the Stranglers. And the Stereophonics was very much courtesy of EJ. And they agreed to come and play, and all their fees went to the charity again. And
they gave their fees away.
They gave their fees away to the charity.
You know, these people were number one after number one. They were huge in the UK at the time.
Massive.
And just it was an iconic sound. And we had an agreement. So they could come if I could play. So unfortunately, they had to put up with me on the drums. But it was just a fabulous occasion. And many of the bands did similar sort of things. I think people often think of rock and roll as being, you know, money, money, money. Quite the opposite, in fact. A lot of them.
No, that's you, so EG. Much back. People think of you, they think money, money, money.
We had 5,000 people on the lawn in front of the stage, the Stereophonics, and then we had the 800 guests at the Grand Prix Ball on a raised bit of the, just outside the marquee. And none of them knew, neither did EJ, that we'd turned down the sound on his drum set.
Oh, don't you believe. That's like something he'd come out with. Don't even dare suggest that. People will believe you, Charlie. Where else did you go to then after that? Because it grew so quickly, didn't it?
It did, it grew. And it. We went to Monaco was our next stop. We went to Monaco, Montreal, Indianapolis, and we did a couple in Hockenheim. So we spanned over a 15-year period. And I think we did, over those years, we did nearly over 30 Grand Prix Bulls.
Charlie, that's absolutely fantastic. So the question is why it doesn't happen now, because the Formula One's even bigger than it's ever been.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think at the time we were lucky there was a big gap in that market in Formula One where, with the exception of what EJ did at Silverstone, I don't think there wasn't anything glamorous after the racing for people to go to. And particularly in places like Monaco and all those, Montreal, yeah, lots of great restaurants and places to go, but there wasn't a big glamorous party. And I think that we lucked out because we fell into this little area where no one had tapped into it before.
Well, I think in Montreal, if you remember, when we were there with you, Charlie, very soon after that, a close friend of David's and mine, Guy La Liberté from Cirque du Soleil,
yeah,
he embraced that and brought it to another level. I remember seeing David out in Guy's house on the outskirts of Montreal, and he also tagged into that. So, I mean, to be very honest, what you created, people are still doing. But to answer David's question, there's, you know, the paddle club emerged after that, and then the hospitality units. It's difficult to find enough people with money, and they're so concentrated on being at the track. So I can see why, you know, what you were doing with the Grand Prix Ball slowly eased off.
I think the advantage we had also, going back, you know, 25 years ago, was that we were able to do these things with you guys when you were driving, you know, that we could get you to come to these events, you know, only for 20 minutes, half an hour at the start, and do these weird and wonderful things like the Dodgems. And in Montreal, we did an ice hockey shootout with Irvine, and Villeneuve was there. And
Mika Häkkinen and his teammate was there.
And Mika was there. And it was great. I mean, because, you know, the guests who paid to come to these events were literally up close to them, and they could get their autograph, they could get their photograph taken, they could do all that, and in a relaxed environment. And I'm not so sure these days that's possible with drivers. And you certainly wouldn't get them doing what we could get them to do.
I think also you have to call to question the teams. The teams are very protective now, yeah, for all sorts of reasons, because they want their drivers performing functions for their sponsors, and you can understand why.
Absolutely.
Whereas there was less emphasis, there was more of a freedom, and particularly at British Grand Prix, because a lot of the teams were based there, and there was sort of a little bit more camaraderie going on between all of the teams. Come on, let's go and do the gig behind at the end of the Grand Prix, which David used to come to, and all the drivers. And the same would apply to the Grand Prix Ball at Stowe. So actually, David, there's one unbelievable story that I remember, and we were trying to concoct it because the Grand Prix at Silverstone fell at the exact same day as the Football World Cup. I think it was 98 in Paris.
Yeah.
And I'm going to let Charlie tell you the story because it was something that took a bit of time to sort out and to the logistics. But we discovered that, yes, it was expensive, but it was a once in a lifetime, that something you would never, ever be able to dream about and put together. And Charlie, the floor is yours.
Well, Paul and I, we concocted the idea, and it was called the Ultimate Day in Sport. And the British Grand Prix and the World Cup final were on the same day. And again, with Eddie's help, we were able to use Oxford Airport. And we helicoptered in 100 guests to the Grand Prix, into the paddock club. And then we got all the slots out of Silverstone as soon as the race had finished. And we had 10 private jets lined up on the runway. And we flew them all to Paris for the World Cup final.
To be there on time. And they were there in time. Both actually, timing.
The timing was perfect. Because kickoff was 9 p.m. in Paris. The race finished in those days probably about 3:30.
That sounds incredible experience.
It was an amazing event. And then we had cars picking them up. They then went to the game, flew home, and cars picked them up and drove them home.
I think any of those 100 people that were on that, they will remember that day for their entire life, even if it was all of their savings, if it was only partial part of their money and it didn't matter. But it's something that it's iconic in sport. You're able to get to the British Grand Prix, watch it live, and then watch the World Cup final. It's one of the great little stories that he put together.
It was a one-off.
Yeah, no, it sounds absolutely fantastic. So, Charlie, tell me this then. Why do you see... So it would just be too difficult to put these events on nowadays, or it just wouldn't be as profitable, or why has it sort of run its course?
I don't think it's run its course. I think the Grand Prix ball as a ball has probably run its course. I think we've all been to many balls now over the years, whether they're charity ones, whatever they might be. I think the format needs to be changed. I think it needs to become a lot more up to date in terms of, I think the days are gone possibly of sitting around with tables of 10 in black tie waiting for things to happen. I think it needs a new,
it needs refreshing. I think people going to a Grand Prix, you can pack your shorts and your t-shirts and your fans. You don't want to have to put a black tie suit in there. And I understand that. But before we let Charlie go, I just really want to say, because this is me saying, all those years later, I want to say a huge thank you, because this was the single biggest event that we've done with the charity. Explain, that was with the help of Bernie, if you remember, and his two kids. And the two girls came and were party of the welcoming party and the red carpet and everything like that, because they understood the gravity of what was needed. We were providing homes in UCLH, which is the London University Hospital, and the three houses with something like about 70 rooms for parents of kids being treated, that they were able to be beside their children, which up to this was never heard of. And travelling and stuff was so horrific that we were able to offer the parents of the child being treated this home from home attitude. Yeah. So please tell us about the Albert Hall. Amazing.
It was a once-off opportunity that the Royal Albert Hall happened to have space on the weekend of the British Grand Prix, and we decided to do the Grand Prix ball at the Royal Albert Hall. And once a year they put in a floor right across the bottom bit, so you can have like 1,000 people sat for dinner. And we had sort of 800 in the lower bit, and then we used the two lines of the boxes. We had 1,400 people for dinner in the Albert Hall. And we had Eddie helped us. We had Ronan Keating perform. We had Misha Paris and Lamar, Beverly Knight, and of course the Robbers. And it was all in aid of Click Sergeant and all part of Eddie and Marie's project that they were doing for the Home from Home. And we raised an amazing $2 million that night for the charity, which was incredible. And it enabled you to then finish the project, didn't it, that particular...
Well, we needed to get it to 12 and we had 10. And so this put the final cap on it. Mind you, there were some extremely very generous donations given that night.
Yeah.
But Charlie, you know, in terms of the food, just tell them who prepared the food, for heaven's sake. I mean,
we had Gordon Ramsay doing the food. We had, again, all these great artists. It was probably, of all the events we've done, it was very special. And to do it in the heart of London, in the Royal Albert Hall, which is such an iconic place anyway, it was a one-off. And
yeah, stunning.
I don't think that opportunity will ever come again to do it there, because it's so unique.
So, Charlie, let me just understand, what is the most stressful thing about putting on an event? Is coming up with the idea, presumably, is pretty easy or straightforward for you if you're, you know, a creative chap, but putting the event together, well, there must be certain points where you're like, Jesus, have we bitten off more than we can chew?
Very much so. And I think, you know, the thing with all these events is you're putting your neck on the line, because you have to outlay everything. Well, not everything, but a large chunk of your costs before you even get one penny in. So you've got to contract with the venues. You've got to, you know, pay for the marquee. You've got to contract with the artists, which are in those, you know, if you're trying to contract Lionel Richie or James Brown or Beyonce, that's a lot of money. And you're paying all this out up front before you've even sold one place. So for us, there was always a huge risk, but we believed, and Paul, my partner, particularly believed, if you didn't take the risks, you would never get the reward. And he was absolutely right. And the Grand Prix ball grew rapidly, and with all huge thanks to Eddie.
No, you can put that one to one side. But, you know, David, talking about risks, I think it's important, because I remember financial risk probably as much as anybody. And we've talked about the great experience of the British Grand Prix and then going on to the World Cup. But if I remember rightly, we paid, Charlie, you paid, for 100 tickets from this hospitality company for the tickets at the final. And then just before the final, they went skint with your money and you didn't get any tickets. So you had to go out to the open market and buy these, because it was frightening. You couldn't ask the guests because they'd paid. It was down to you. And, you know, I don't know about insurance or whatever, but that's the problem, David, that, you know, you're dealing with so many different parameters within the scope. I can see why you're asking the question. Tell us of all the downsides in it, because everyone talks about the upside. I promise you, stress, strain, and there's nothing worse than financial strain. And that was the epitome of that. You know, to have those people go bankrupt at the last moment on you was catastrophic. I thought it was going to fold the whole business down.
Yeah, but we managed to. I mean, it was a big blow, because we paid for these tickets 6 months previously from a supposed reputed company who were going to be able to provide the final tickets, and they didn't.
Was that company registered in Northampton near Silverstone Racetrack by any chance? Or was it an address in Dublin?
With a bank account in Liechtenstein, perhaps. You know all about those banks, don't you, DC?
No, not at all. I have a very simple structure.
Do.
Everywhere I go around the world, I meet someone that goes, EJ owes me money.
Lies. Absolute blatant lies. They're fictitious. Anyway, I think we're finished with Charlie, because we've got to let him go. He's going off to meet some of his mates and get more tequilas, I suppose, before the football.
Can I tell them the one very quick story about you and the cricket?
Absolutely.
Oh, sure.
Did you know EJ's a cricketer?
Not a chance.
So
act as a stumps.
I am a stump.
It was 2008, just on the Saturday. We're doing the Grand Prix ball on the Saturday night. We had George Benson performing and Steve Harley in Cockney Rebel. And we decided we were going to do a charity cricket match in the afternoon, because EJ was, in those days, the Jordan team was, I think, must have been Force India in 2008, was it? Probably.
But I don't know. I'm sure
anyway,
what,
so EJ was free. So we had the Eddie Jordan 11 against the Alan Lamb 11.
Lammy. God.
And Lammy bought, South Africa were touring England at cricket that summer, and he brought six of the South African test side to come and play. And EJ scored 50.
Yeah, I made 50, but I was always
no
lucky.
Way.
He scored 50.
Yeah, I don't know who was bowling. I think some guy who was
some bloke underarm.
Some guy who was hard of visionary.
He's bowling
anyway,
underarm.
I did make 50, and actually they came. God, they were fantastic players, weren't they? Unbelievable.
Just cricketers.
I don't know if you know Lammy, by the way, guys. he'd be a wild character to have on the show at some stage in the future, David, because he's such a he's born in South Africa but playing for England, and he captained England, and but they still revere him and love him in South Africa. And
great man,
he's
lovely,
absolutely guy. Mad. But he talked about Stowe School, but I had two kids, my two boys were at school in Stowe, and who, above all people, was their cricket coach, only Lammy. So Lammy was attached to that school, so it was clear that he was going to bring the best possible team to the ball that day. Anyway, guys,
great days.
I have to let it go back to David because he's in charge of this program. I'm going to have to edit you out of this thing.
Yeah, well, look, Charlie, we really appreciate you coming in, and we'll thank our anchors for their questions. And they can, of course, send in further questions and leave a review wherever they listen to the podcast, and make sure you tell anyone and everyone you know all about it. And Eddie, you're going to sign off in your own beautiful style.
I'm going to finish with a growl, Charlie. Are you ready? Keep those ear defenders on because it... keep the growls going. DC, I love seeing you. You're looking great, brother. And thank you, Charlie.
Thank you, DC. Thanks, guys.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.